Rápido.
A call to order the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on Public Safety. Today is March 12th, 2015. We are convened to continue the public hearing on Senate Bill 5533, the budget bill for the Public Defense Services Commission. And what we're going to do, so we don't run into time constraints like we did yesterday, is have the public testimony first. Then Ms. Cosine has, Director Cosine has some additional information to present to us. And then we will adjourn after that. So Mr. Bender, please tee it up for us.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair and subcommittee members. I just wanted to point out where some of the materials are in all this. I think they sometimes can be a little bit difficult to find, but when Director Cosine comes up to complete her part of the presentation, that material was saved on Tuesday's meeting
the 10th.
There's also, however, an item that is saved in today's meeting date materials. I would just like to let you know that it's there. Senator Winters had a question for information on felony caseload trends by counties, and Public Defense Services Commission did submit that information, and it's in OLIS under today's date.
Okay, thank you. We have Joe Basler and Aaron Knott. Are there other people that have signed up on the sheet? I think that's it then. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon. Chair Shields, members of the committee. My name is Joe Basler. I work for Oregon AFSCME. We represent the department, and it's our newest local. It's very close. We have also represent Multnomah Public Defenders and Metropolitan Defense Incorporated, the attorneys there. So we have a great, we think public defense is a very important part of our union, a very important part of the criminal justice system. The main thing I want to say is we're very supportive of the department's budget and their sort of understanding of the fundamental fairness and the inequity that we have in the system when we don't support one part of the equation. It sort of throws it into unbalance. I think we also represent the attorneys at the Attorney General's office, and parity with those attorneys and the attorneys at the Public Defense Services Commission we think is also very, very important. It's hard to sit across the table from someone doing the exact same work and know that, you know, you're not making as much, and the same thing can be said for it for the public defenders out in the community, going against DAs. But I'm sitting next to Mr. Knott, so all DAs are wonderful people, I'm sure. But it can be hard. The one thing I do want to mention hasn't really been talked about is I don't want folks to forget about the support staff. The legislature last session helped start moving us closer and improving the situation for the defense attorneys, but the support staff kind of got left behind, and I know that it's sometimes, you know, it's not the first thing you think of, and it's not the first thing folks talk about, but it's really important to also realize that it's not just the attorneys, it's those around who support them too and make sure that they're included in the work you do. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Joe. Mr. Knott.
Chair Shields, members of the committee, my name's Aaron Knott. I'm the legislative director for the Attorney General and the Oregon Department of Justice. Here on behalf of the Attorney General, she asked me to come and present on her behalf to emphasize our support for the budget of the Office of Public Defense Services. And to correct one comment made by Mr. Basler, I am not currently a deputy district attorney, but I was before I took this job. And that gave me some insight into this, not just on the trial level. As you've been hearing throughout the last day, we at the Department of Justice are the counterparts of OPDS on the appellate level. And ours is an oppositional system of government. And that presupposes and, in fact, requires that the state has a representative, a defendant has a representative, and they both do their job to the full extent of their ability. And in that friction and that collision is not just justice, but truth. And that completely depends on both sides having everything they need. And if they don't, that falls apart. And on the trial level, that representation is of a defendant. It's of one person. But as you heard from Peter Gatlin yesterday, as that goes up throughout the appellate process, the rulings that are returned by the court are rulings not just for that defendant. They're rulings for absolutely everyone. And so it is vitally important that we get that right. And getting it right means that robust exchange between both sides. And you heard from DA Beglau, as you're hearing from me today, that even those of us that are on the law enforcement side of this process understand and indeed rely on OPDS to reach the right result. So absolute support from the Attorney General for this budgetary proposal.
Okay, great. Thank you, Mr. Knapp. Any questions? All right. Would anybody else like to testify? All right, then. So we will then bring up Director Cozine again.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Shields, members of the committee. I'm just going to get myself oriented here. We begin on page 37 of the slides where we left off yesterday. So Mr. Gertlin was here and he was talking about our key performance measure that addresses appellate level work. Our other two existing key performance measures address the agency's performance. First is customer service, and that is the number of customers who rate our service in terms of timeliness, accuracy, helpfulness, expertise, and availability of information as good or excellent. And the third key performance measure is a measure of the best practices followed by our commission. So you can find our annual performance progress report in your appendices, and you will see that we meet or come very close to meeting all of our targets and have for several years. So with the exception being the appellate case processing, and that is because we just lowered our target from 220 days to 180 days, hoping to get that appellate brief, that opening appellate brief, filed within 6 months of the date of record settlement. So that is a new target for us, and it is ambitious, but we think we can meet it once all the lawyers are trained and processing cases at their most efficient levels. So we have two new proposals in terms of KPMs that would actually address trial-level providers. So we require that our trial-level providers, again, who are not employees, these are people who are performing services under contract with our agency, and that contract requires that they obtain certain numbers of continuing legal education credits in the area of practice in which they represent public defense clients. One proposal is to measure that, to make sure that our providers really are obtaining those CLE credits. The second measures the performance of the lawyers who are in the parent-child representation program. It specifically targets the amount of time that attorneys are spending with their adult clients, so the parents. We ask that all the attorneys spend an average of one-third of their time with their clients, and this particular KPM would measure the amount of time they're spending with those parent clients to make sure that their advocacy is client-directed and informed. Moving on to challenges. You heard so much about this yesterday, and I don't want to belabor too much because I think that the folks who spoke to you yesterday did it probably more eloquently than I can. But you know that our low case rates are a challenge. The high student debt load and the ineligibility for loan repayment is a challenge for many of our providers. Large caseloads mean that our attorneys work long hours and that they find themselves challenged to meet their ethical and performance standards, or they feel like they may be challenged to do so when their caseloads get too big. And I think you heard testimony yesterday from one provider who said she simply could not do this work anymore given the demands that it was placing on her schedule and the rate of compensation she was receiving. One challenge for our agency is the continued development of data-driven performance measures. We do like to look at how our attorneys are performing. We do check the court's record, OGIN, to make sure that all the case credits claimed are accurate. As we continue to work with the Judicial Department, we will develop more measures that look at how our attorneys are performing at the trial court level. In terms of accomplishments, you've heard the agency was created 11 years ago, And in that time, we have created a public defense delivery system that is a national model of excellence. It complies in most areas with the 10 principles of public defense delivery. That is a standard that is created by the American Bar Association. We have PDSC oversight of efficient, reliable, and transparent transparent contracting processes. Every year when we initiate contracts with providers, the commission reviews those and approves them before they become effective. We sponsor annual conferences. You heard about that on Tuesday. We have modified our agency structure in the last 2 years, and we've done it all within existing resources. We had two high-level managers retire, and so we were able to go ahead and ensure a continuity of services, and we will continue this process with the retirement of Mr. Gartland at the end of this month. We successfully launched our parent-child representation program, and you've heard about that. And we have a very highly regarded appellate division, which helps guide the practice of law across the state. We also need to talk to you about budget drivers. We touched on that on Tuesday.
Yeah. Representative Wisnett.
Thank you. Director, have we looked at, I don't think you can ask the clients if if they give it good or bad, if they lose or whatever, but to get inputs and maybe influence our decisions, have you thought about asking the judges if they thought to rate your defense attorneys? Has that ever been considered?
Co-Chair Shields and Representative Wisnett, we send a survey to judges every year.
Okay.
And not only do
But not
we,
each, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
Not each case.
It's not specific case feedback, but what we ask our contract providers to do is to actually meet with the court regularly to get feedback on cases and on lawyers. So each contract administrator by contract has a responsibility to make sure that the lawyers who are operating under that contract are meeting the court's and their clients' needs. So we follow up with judges to make sure that the contract administrators are fulfilling that obligation.
Just thinking out loud, maybe that, your attorneys are, they're trying the best they can, but a judge might have an unbiased to say, and that would carry more weight, saying the guy had a good argument, he needed more time, or he didn't have staff to put together. It doesn't look like, I'm just throwing it out there as another mm-hmm. way to support, your need, your request and your budgets.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think you have a letter from Judge Murphy explaining that the lawyers in the parent-child representation program, now that they're present at shelter hearings, they are providing better services. And we get that through our surveys regularly. And I absolutely appreciate the suggestion. Thank you. Any more questions? Okay. Budget drivers. We touched on this on Tuesday, and as we discussed, it can be very difficult to predict what is going to drive caseloads in any particular jurisdiction. So things that we do tend to look at are legislative and voter-initiated changes to criminal and juvenile laws that create new offenses. I have a visual aid for you. Some of you may have seen this before, but you heard one of our providers talk about how in the 80s, the caseloads were around 150 cases, 160, and that now they're over 300. And it inspired me to pull our criminal code from 1986. It's a little tattered, and you've probably seen this demonstration before. It's very rudimentary, but the text, the font size is the same, and this is our current code. Mm-hmm. So the laws have become more complex. Every year we're passing more and more laws with more and more collateral consequences, and it drives the amount of time required for lawyers to adequately represent their clients. So there are also changes in law enforcement policies and in staffing levels, district attorney offices. Court procedures and schedules can also change the amount of time that a lawyer spends on a case. Changes in law that affect by the federal appellate courts and state appellate courts. The Padilla case is one that required lawyers to start advising clients of the immigration consequences of any particular conviction. The norms in terms of what adequate representation is, those change as well. So in post-conviction relief cases, we have to look at what the courts are requiring and make sure that the lawyers at the trial level are providing that level of service. Demographic trends, such as the at-risk population, Oregon's crime rate, the availability of jail space, recidivism rates, removal rates, children from their homes, Oregon's economy and rates of unemployment, and access to social services. Our commission travels all around the state, and they hear regularly that when social services aren't available, clients who are in a precarious situation sometimes end up going the wrong direction. So we know that all of this has an impact. We do have analysts who look at each county as we're preparing to contract for the next cycle, and they do their best to determine what the charges will look like in the coming biennium. They look at historical trends. They also look at these factors. They talk with the judges. They talk with other system partners. And that's how we come up with our projections for the future biennium.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director, do you see an increase in the need for translators significantly?
Co-Chair Shields, Representative Wisnett, I can look at whether or not we've had an increase in the number and the request for interpreters. I don't know off the top of my head, but it's certainly something we could look at. I know that when we go out to our to counties, the commission frequently asks whether there are a sufficient number of interpreters. So we know that they're used regularly, but I don't know exactly what the trend line is.
Follow up.
Hello.
And that was, is that a separate budget item in your budget, or is it not?
Co-Chair Shields, Senate, Representative Wisnett, it is not a separate item in our budget. But when we get those, we talked about non-routine expense requests. When we get those NRE requests, it's for a particular service. And so.
And that includes translators?
It could be an interpreter, yes.
Thank you.
Of course, I'll have to see if the object code attached, you know, we attach object codes to track those kind of expenditures. So I can dig through that and see what we can find for you.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
All right. So moving on then to our agency request budget. The all fund type request is approximately $322 million. This is broken down and to separate categories for you on this slide. Trial level, non-death penalty, death penalty, appeals. Those are the civil cases and criminal conflicts that our office cannot handle. So we will handle all appeals in the criminal arena and in the juvenile arena as long as there isn't a conflict of interest. If there is a conflict, we have to revert that out to a private provider. And on the dependency and TPR side, our office represents parents, and the kids then are all conflict cases, and those go to an appellate provider outside of our office. Contracts and business services, and then there is a $3.2 million transfer to the Judicial Department. That is that ACP funding that we talked about, the Application Contribution Program, where defendants are paying into the system via an application fee and a contribution amount. So those go into this particular ACP account, and then there is a transfer over to the Judicial Department. This is simply a list of our policy option packages, and they're in numerical order. I'll go through each one separately. So policy option package 100. This package is the package that addresses consistent case rates for all provider types. At the end of 2013, you've heard there was a little, this legislature graciously gave us a bump for our nonprofit public defender lawyers. This package puts the consortia and law firm members at the same rates as public defenders. It also includes mileage for our Eastern County, primarily Eastern counties, but some other regions as well, where lawyers are traveling large distances to visit clients or to make court appearances. Right now, they pay for that out of their contract funds, and so it does have a significant impact on their on the amount available to them as income. Policy Option Package 101, this is the package that addresses parity and at the trial level. So I will acknowledge to you that this is a big number. And some of you may recall at the close of the 2013 session, there was actually a floor debate on our budget. There were no votes that were in opposition, or there were protest votes, excuse me, because people felt that the budget wasn't sufficient. And following that vote, I met with legislators, and so many asked me, what would it take? What would it take to get public defenders to the place where prosecution is? And so we spent time not only figuring out that number, but we actually went, we had 8 regional meetings. We met with a representative from every single contract provider across the state to ask them what was happening in their contract and what they needed. This number was a product of comparison to 2013 salary scales for prosecution offices, and so we know that they've actually had a few bumps since then. So I think that this package reflects what it would take to get us to within about 5%, but it's likely that because of the increases they've had over the last few years, it gets us close. It may not get us all the way there. Quality assurance. You've heard me talk about the fact that in these trial level contracts, there is a contract administrator responsible for ensuring quality. We do not pay them for that service. They have to be paid from their consortium members out of the flat rates that we pay for representation in the case. So if someone's getting paid $300 for a misdemeanor and the administrator, they want to pay the administrator something for the time they spend administering the contract, has to come out of that case rate. In talking to our contract administrators, they indicated they're spending a significant amount of time responding to our requests for information and checking on the quality of services of their lawyers. It's uncompensated time. This package permits a 2% line item in a contract that would actually be dedicated to contract administration. It also would allow contractors to implement an electronic case management system so that they could more easily collect and transfer data that we're requesting to our agency. And I will also note that that helps providers in the electronic e-court environment, because right now we have providers who are still paper-based. So when we ask for information, they're entering into an Excel spreadsheet and then sending it to us, which is additional time they're spending that could be automated. Provider hourly rate increases. You've heard throughout the course of the last 2 days the challenges that are created by these low hourly rates, and they're very low. I probably not much more needs to be said, except that they're makes it very hard for us to be competitive. Dependency improvement. Again, you've heard a lot about this package. This would allow us to expand, and a very small percentage, just about $313 is a portion for staffing in our office, permanent staffing. We've cobbled stuff together for this biennium, but we'd like to be able to have permanent funding to continue a targeted effort to improve dependency representation statewide. So not just for the pilot program, but statewide quality improvement in the juvenile arena. Also package 105, which is parity for the employees at our office. In all but 3 positions, the employees in our office are paid at 3% to 7% below other state agencies. So we have made strides in catching up, as you heard yesterday. We still have some work to do. This package would address additional office space. We have 6 lawyers who are sharing offices that are about 100 square feet, so they're pretty small when they're having client telephone calls and they're trying to concentrate on an appellate brief. It can be very hard to be sharing a small space. We have a very, very small conference room. It actually has a pillar in the middle of it, and that's where we hold our commission meetings and other trainings. We're just running out of space. That being said, all of our employees would tell you that they care much more about parity than they do about space. So, package 107, this simply represents a shortfall in the ACP account. We had hoped that the ACP account would be garnering more revenue through the course of the biennium. It didn't, so it's about $1.2 million shy, and so this would backfill it with general fund dollars. You heard yesterday and the day before a lot about the importance of quality representation, and I don't want to belabor it. I know that we have taken up more time, more of your time than we had originally intended. So unless there are questions, I think we can go ahead and end. But I really do appreciate all the time and attention you've given us the last 3 days.
Just Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The only thing, you know, you're grossly underpaid, and so are, I think, the deputy district attorneys as well. But they're not exactly the same job either. And the deputy district attorneys are, sworn officers, which makes a difference in their, they have less freedom of life than do public defenders. And you have to, the defense bar has to be wide open to do things that maybe that the deputies aren't. But just, they're not, I've heard people keep saying you're the same job, and they're not exactly the same job. They're very similar. You're grossly underpaid, and I'm going to support an increase in your budget for sure, but I just wanted to say that.
Thank you. Co-Chair Shields, Representative Barker, thank you very much. And just to clarify, so there isn't a misconception, we are all officers of the court. So I'm not...
Well, they're deputized. They're under more personal restrictions in a lot of ways, but I'm still very supportive of your...
And I do appreciate that.
Senator Winters.
And I'm sure that there are others that share this. And we had an offline conversation, and that the juvenile dependency cases, and particularly the parent representation program that I'm just encouraging you, and I've already had a conversation with the director of DHS to have some conversation to look at how maybe we can find, some abilities between the two so that we're not actually duplicating. You know, Senator Bates is also interested because of the work that we're doing to lower the utilization of foster care. So I think, and I really applaud what you're doing, but I do think we need to have those conversations.
Co-Chair Shields, Senator Winters, I very much appreciate the suggestion, and we'll continue to work with our agency partners.
All right. Anything else for the good of the order? Mr. Bender, where are we going next?
You will, starting on Monday, you are going to be beginning your public hearings that will last for a full week on the Department of Corrections budget.
Good. All right. Thank you very much for your testimony. We really appreciate the job that you're doing for all Oregonians to protect our rights. This meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This meeting is adjourned.